Well, it's 2 o'clock, Tuesday, January 28th, 2025, and we will call the regular meeting of the Ponce Inlet Planning Board to order. Please rise for your Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Ms. Robette?
Here.
Mr. Kazuba?
Here.
Mr. Reback is absent. Mr. Cannon?
Here.
Mr. Carney?
Here.
Mr. Young?
Here.
Ms. Van Hoot?
Here.
And we do have a form for members and both alternates.
Okay. Item 2A, oath of office for those who are up for that.
Mr. Cannon, Ms. Vanderbeek, and Mr. Young, if you would please stand and raise your right hand. I'll administer for the oath of office. And if you agree, please state so by saying I do or I will at the end of the oath. I, John Cannon, Soraya Vanderbeek, and Joseph Young, citizens of the United States of America and residents of the town of Ponce Inlet, being appointed to the Planning Board of the town of Ponce Inlet, Florida, do hereby solemnly swear or affirm that I will support the Constitution of the United States of America, the laws of the state of Florida, and the charter and ordinances of the town of Ponce Inlet, that I am duly qualified to serve under the Constitution of the state of Florida and the charter of the town of Ponce Inlet, and that I will well and faithfully perform the duties of the board on which I am about to enter, so help me God.
Well,
thank you and congratulations.
Congratulations, everybody. We'll move on to item 2B, the election of the chair. I believe this requires a motion and a second. And the chair is open to nominations.
I nominate Michael Kashuba to be chairman.
I would second that.
We have a motion and a second, and I appreciate your confidence, but we'll have a roll call vote.
Mr. Ovak?
Yes.
I'm sorry, Mr. Cannon?
Yes.
Mr. Ovak?
Yes.
Mr. Kazuba?
Yes.
Mr. Carney?
Yes.
And Mr. Young?
Yes.
And the motion passes 5-0.
Item 2C, election of the vice chair. Again, I'll entertain a motion, and this requires a motion and a second.
Well, I nominate Mr. Carney as vice chair.
I'll second that.
Okay.
We have a motion and a second for John Varney as the vice chair for 2025 for the planning board. Roll call vote, please.
Mr. Cannon?
Yes.
Mr. Kazuba?
Yes.
Mr. Ovette?
Yes.
Mr. Young?
Yes.
And the motion passes 5-0.
We'll move along to adoption of the agenda. I assume the board members have had a chance to look at the agenda. Given that, I'll look for a motion and a second to adopt the agenda.
So moved.
I'll second. Can we just do an all in favor on this one? Or is this a roll call? All in favor of adopting agenda, say aye.
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 Nay. Motion passes. Item 4. Approval of the minutes from our last meeting, which was way back on September 24th, 2024. If there are any recommended changes, we should hear them now. If not, I'll entertain a motion and a second to adopt the meeting minutes.
Move to adopt the minutes as presented.
I'll second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Item five, report of staff.
Yes. Thank you, Chairman. We have a few updates to provide you. Our final watershed management plan report was sent to DEP. This included the exposure and sensitivity model results, conclusions, and recommendations for review. We're happy to note that an approval letter was sent by DEP to the town on December 13, 2024. So our water management plan is now approved. Our consultant for that, Collective Water Resources, is going to be helping staff prioritize a project list and provide a pre-design general economic analysis for each one of those projects. And that'll be presented at a later date. Now that we have the water management plan accepted by DEP, staff can move forward implementing the Adaption Action Plan. That plan will be consistent with the Florida Adaption Planning Guidebook pursuant to the town's grant work plan and includes the following: assessment of adapted capacities, prioritization of adaption needs, and identification of adaption strategies. Staff is also working on a resiliency webpage, and that's going to be part of our website. It's going to include the efforts undertaken and the priorities for addressing resiliency actions in the future. Our water supply work plan has been revised. It's been completed. It will be added to our year-based amendments as a supplement to the comprehensive plan. And that draft language for that year-based amendments are still underway, and we plan to get those completed this year. Volusia County contractors began right-of-way survey work, I'm sure you noticed, for the South Peninsula Sidewalk Project in August of last year. And that should be wrapping up soon. And once it does, the county will hire an engineer to finalize design once that survey work's done. We're also updating our website. We're adding our online permitting portal. Six permit types are available for online submission right now, and we'll be adding additional permit types as we work through all the bugs. In our building division, at the end of December of last year, there were 1,408 building permits issued, including five new single-family homes, and 2,287 inspections were conducted. Typically, our average is approximately 1,200 permits per year. And finally, in our code enforcement division, code violation cases saw a 10% increase over the past year, rising from 774 cases in 2023 to 862 cases in 2024. And with that, if there are any questions.
Members have any questions with staff on this?
Just a couple quick ones, Darren. Still no projected end date for the survey of Peninsula?
They thought it was going to be done by December of last year, but I think the weather probably had something to do with that, and so they're not sure off the top of my head, but it should be wrapping up soon, I would think.
Okay. And regarding code enforcement, do we have any, do we keep track on an ongoing basis of what fines ended up having to be paid?
Yes, we do. We have that.
So any idea what year to date is?
I don't have that off the top of my head, but I can get that and I can forward it to the rest of the board.
And related, have we found a master yet for code enforcement?
We have two submittals for RFQ. And we're looking to actually have a public hearing with them, the two, and city council.
Good.
For them to decide.
All right, great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I have a couple of questions. Getting back to the water management plan, just to make sure, I know there's a lot of plans that are moving around here, but that's the one where we had the joint planning board.
Yes.
Town council.
Back in June. Correct.
And you talked about moving towards prioritizing some projects. Do you have any idea of how many projects are we talking? Is it going to be a list of 45 projects or a list of 10?
I'm thinking it's maybe 10 to 12 major projects. I could be wrong, but I'll get those numbers to you.
Okay. And again, I know this is early, but 10 or 12 projects stretched out over what kind of time period are we talking
about? We're looking at a decades long.
25 years?
Yeah, because there's going to be some major capital required to do these projects.
And are many of these projects projects that likely would not go ahead without financial assistance from somewhere?
Most likely. We're going to need assistance from some.
Okay. I was just sort of answering some asking some general questions on.
When you break them down and you look at the costs, yeah, there's going to have to be some assistance from other agencies.
Okay. Because I know that, you know, when we had that meeting last June, I think people were excited, at least I was, about the direction we were headed. And now there's been this sort of lull, and which is understandable because there's a lot of staff work that goes into implementing this and getting the approval from DEP, which you've gotten now. So I was just sort of wanting to do a little catch-up on where things are headed and stand.
Okay. Yeah. Once we get that list, then you know, everybody will be invited for presentations for that. So.
Okay. The second thing I want to talk about is not strictly under the purview of the planning board or the town, but it's now the first of the year, and all this talk about trucking sand onto the beach, I'm not seeing it. Do you know have any idea where that stands?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear my hearings.
The plan by both the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and the county to truck sand onto the beaches.
Yes.
I haven't heard much about that lately.
Okay.
Do you have any idea?
I know there was a link sent out a while ago. I'll try and find that and send that to the board, too. It's a county link.
Because I know that just last week I'm on a mailing list for Volusia County beach improvements, and it's sort of it was the regular newsletter, and there was no mention at all about trucking sand onto the beach. And now I'm thinking, you know, a lot of people have spent hundreds of hours on this, and the last I had heard is going to start late 2024, early 2025. And now I'm not hearing anything. Obviously, I'm not in the meetings and everything, but if I sort of wanted to get a feel for where is that headed.
I'll find out what I can and forward it to you all.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
I have a quick question for you. On the the estimated 10 or 12 projects in the major water plan, in terms of the assistance that we expect to get from other agencies, are we comfortable on a given plan that we're going to get sufficient assistance, or what's our level of confidence on the application and receipt of what's going to be necessary for us to afford project number 4 or something?
I think we're just a little, it's a little early to know that just yet until we start dipping our toes into those waters after we do our priority list. I off the top of my head, I'm not sure what our confidentiality or our confidence percentage is on those.
Okay. But would it not be good to have some idea for some project if you can determine that there's just no way you're going to get the assistance you anticipate, whether we put it off or take another direction and not waste a lot of time or money and effort on that, something that won't be that where we won't get the financial
right
assistance.
I think that'd probably be it as doing the priority list is that'll shake out
that kind of information you're talking about.
Like if it's a pie in the sky, we probably shouldn't have it up at the top of the list.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Not to tip your hand or anything, but is there a consensus of what project number 1 is?
And they're all, capacity projects, and it's going to depend because once you bring it to council, I mean, staff and your consultant may have a certain idea of what priority be, could be, but, you know, that could change once council sees it. So, yeah, it's a little early.
Okay. Any other questions from the board? Alternates can also ask questions.
I have one. So, Mr. Lear, at the last meeting, you mentioned very briefly that you were doing some initial planning on potentially having a replacement for the fire station. Can you update us on what's going on there? And
I do believe at the Essential Services Board meeting, they discussed that they're going to have a study regarding that the design and a placement of where the new fire station would need to be. And I think that's what they're looking to add into this year's budget. I can't remember the amount of what the study was going to be off the top of my head, but they're looking to add that in this year's budget for that study and design.
And who is requesting this look at doing the replacement fire station?
I'm sorry, I can't.
Who initiated this activity? Who initiated the activity? Your staff didn't just pick this up and do it on their own. So who?
No, I believe it was the fire department.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions from board members? We'll move on in that case to item number six, correspondence and disclosure of ex parte communication. Looks like there is none. Item number seven, hearing of cases. Again, looks like there is none. And we'll move on to item eight, business items. Item 8A, annual board member training and Form 8B review from the town attorney. Looks like we have somebody new sitting in the seat today. If you can introduce yourself and talk away.
All right. Thank you. Well, my last name is actually new, so I am actually new here, and that is my last name. My first name's Holly. So I'm an associate at Shepherd Smith Brackens in Hand. And so thank you. Oh, is it not on? Oh.
There it goes.
Sorry. Thank you for having me. And we're going to play a video which will go over the basics. That way, we're not spending too much time really getting into the details. The packet is pretty comprehensive. It should answer a majority of your questions, but I'm here if you have any questions that come up for you in between, after the movie and before we all get out of here. How many of you have done training before for some sort of local? Excellent. Well, this is my first time, so so bear with me. So yeah, if you have any questions, you can either write them down or you can just ask to pause the movie if you don't want to lose them. That's how my brain operates. So we'll just play it and then go from there.
Just like this one, the city bodies that I represent. And we finally got smart enough to put this thing on video tape so that people like you, who are either currently on or about to enter into service on some public board commission, can have the benefit of the mistakes that I made and those around me have made in trying to comply with this sometime for some shit law. So why is this video important to you? Well, over the next 30 minutes, we're going to talk about the reasons why the sunshine law is important to you and how you can stay out of trouble. So let's start with this. Most people generally know that the Sunshine Law is about open government, but it's just like your mother told you, the devil's in the details. What you should know is that violations of this law can range from anything from a civil infraction with up to a $500 fine, up to a second-degree misdemeanor with 6 months in jail as a possible penalty for potential violations. That's no picnic. But guess what? Neither is being investigated. And so a lot of what you're going to hear me talk about today deals with how to avoid the appearance of impropriety that can lead to investigations, which are at best embarrassing and at worst end up in convictions. I hope I've got your attention with that word convictions. It was intentional. This is serious stuff. It is a big deal. And it doesn't matter that you're a volunteer and that your time was valuable and that you're doing it in public service. You're expected to comply with the law regardless of all of those things. So listen up, and let me try to provide you some information on how you can stay. a politically based law. And when I say politically based, I mean this. The enforcement court is through a local state attorney who is a political officer and elected to office. And his two biggest constituencies when it comes to sunshine law are the media, both print and broadcast. They're the ones who, if they get one violation, will be pursuing the compliance. And because the facts of the violations will get reported heavily, or potential violations will get reported heavily, the state attorney, they can't afford to look the other way, and they won't. Even if you're innocent of what you're ultimately accused of here, you can count on an investigation. And it is this point in my discussions with my boards that I talk about what I call the food, sports talk, and investigations or not. Early on in my city attorney career, I represented the city that used to have early workshops at 6:30 in the evening. And because that was early enough that members couldn't get home to eat dinner, we usually had dinner right in, whether it was Chinese food or sandwiches, you name it. And we would sit in a conference room, typically discussing things like sports, Gator football, sometimes Seminole football, Yankee baseball, the Red Sox, those kind of things, not city business. In attendance of those meetings, I mentioned myself with the police chief. That's important to them because the police chief, having been observing any sunshine law violations, would have had a duty to report us on. That didn't happen. But what did happen is a former mayor of the town walked into the city hall building, saw the glass conference doors that we were all eating and chatting, assumed there was a violation, was unhappy with the makeup of the then council, and reported us. 4 months later, we were exonerated. 4 months of newspaper articles, 4 months of witness interviews, 4 months of answering written questions. It was not a fun experience. And it scared me, it would have scared you, and I hope that it scares you now that that potential exists. Appearance, appearance, appearance is critically important to comply with this law. Because while the basis of the law is what we're talking about, the fact that you're talking with another member of your same board or commission on what someone assumes will be the business of your agency is enough to get you investigated, and that's no bar. Concern yourselves with how things appear, not just what you're doing. In this area of the law, which involves always politics at some level, you are one vote away from turning from hero today to villain tomorrow. And if someone doesn't like the way you vote, you can take this to the ballot. If they see what they perceive as a violation, you will get reported. You need to avoid the appearance of a problem. So, in order to do that, you need to know what the law says. So what does it say? The meat of the sunshine law is only 144 words long. And the fact that it was drafted by lawyers are telling something. Because literally, what's been litigated about this law fills volumes of text. Volumes. Only a lawyer could take 144 words and stretch it to this much law. But they did. So what does it actually provide for that you need to know? Well, the three big points. Number one, that boards and commissions are subject to open meetings, meaning publics allowed to attend. Those meetings have to be reasonably noticed, and minutes have to be kept. That's it. That's it. Oh, geez, you say. Shelton, that's simple. That's not a big deal. What's the problem? Well, like your mom told you, the devil's in the details. So we now have to go back through and talk to you about what do these things mean. Let's start with the upper idea of what a board or commission is. For the purposes of this law, when we're talking about a board or commission, we're talking about public bodies at a state or local level, elected boards or commissions, appointed boards or commissions, and advisory boards. Decision-making is the key to whether you're covered. If you are involved in the decision-making tree, and I'm going to explain that to you, you are covered. So what is the decision-making tree? If what your body does either recommends, evaluates information for another body, makes suggestions, weeds through candidates for another job, any of those things, you are in the decision-making tree. That is, you are part of the tree, the base of the tree, that ultimately leads up to the top where a decision gets made. And if you're in that tree, you're covered by this law. That means specifically for you folks who might wonder, advisory boards, because advisory boards advise. And by giving advice, even though it doesn't have to be followed, you are definitely covered by this law. Why is this important? Well, this is where I talk about what we call the sausage rule. Have you ever heard the expression, you don't want to know how sausage is made, you just want to eat it? Well, the sunshine law is a little bit different than that. The sunshine law is all about the public's recognition of how the sausage gets made. And it's that process that the sunshine law is designed to protect. So when you're thinking about, geez, it seems a little excessive, remember that it's the public's right to know that trumps everything else when it comes to policy considerations with this law. What's the next aspect that we have to talk about? What's the meeting? Oh, geez, again, you're saying to yourself, Shepard, this is simple. We know the meetings. We get the meeting with notices. We know where to go. We show up. We have a meeting. Yes, but that's not all. Anytime two or more of you, two or more members, of the same board or commission are in the same place or discussing the same thing, and it has to do with business issues that are likely or foreseeable to come before your board or commission, you are engaged in the meeting. While that may sound even simpler to you, let me elaborate a little bit more. It would include phone calls. It will include letters back and forth. It will include emails back and forth. It will include texting. It will include all manner of conversations to and from meetings while you're walking in from the parking lot or walking out to the parking lot. If you're there talking with another member of your same board or commission about a matter that is foreseeably coming before you, has come before you, and may come back again, any of those, you are covered by the sunshine law, and that is a meeting. That's one of those details that the devil is in. I have never been to a city meeting or a government meeting of any kind where I didn't see what could have been reported by somebody as a violation. Before the meeting begins, people talking on the dock. After the meeting ends, people walking to the parking lot and having discussions. It happens all over the place. My sincere hope is that those conversations are all about more because they deal with things like football and baseball and little league and school and soccer moms. But I have a suspicion that just on occasion, there might be a violation going on there. So I want to caution you, that's where people tend to get in trouble. All right. So what does this require of you? We've talked about what a board commission is. We've talked about what a meeting is. We've talked about the fact that minutes need to be kept. And again, even with those definitions, they sound, you know, fairly understandable. But they require you to be constantly on your guard. And if you say to me now why, I want to have to talk about the words I said earlier. You are one vote away from being here today and the middle of tomorrow. Don't forget what I'm telling you here. I've seen it happen, and this is what the nature of your business is when you're on a public board or commission. You can never forget the politics. Never. Now, one of the things that I get asked frequently when I give these presentations is, well, I have to talk to so-and-so member before the next meeting. We have to discuss this issue. What can I do? Well, the first thing I tell them always is, don't do it. Simply don't do it. It's not worth it. But if you do, let's go back to the big three. Even if it's only with one member of the same body, have a meeting with reasonable notice and keep notes, keep minutes that are available as public records after the fact. What else do I put on that? Well, when you think about meetings that occur like that, you need to have them in a place that's accessible. So private clubs are out, private restaurants are out, public restaurants are out, private homes are out. You need to have a meeting in a place where the public can reasonably feel that they can be included and would be included without cost to them to see how public business is being done. So keep that in mind. First answer is don't do it. But if you got to do it, make sure you comply with the statute. Now, I'd also like to talk here about issues involving how do you deal You are free and should readily talk to any member of staff at any time. And it's not a sunshine law issue. Why is that? Because they are not on your same board or commission. They are staff. You could also talk to members of other boards of commission in your same jurisdiction or other places for input and information. If you were on a planning and zoning commission and wanted to speak to the mayor of your city or town, you would be free to do that, and you should do that. Other members of council, the same way. Any other body in the city, no problem. It's just when you're engaged with the people who are on your same board commission that there's an issue. So keep those in mind. Use those tools to get yourself informed so when you come to your meetings, you'll be ready. This next part of the video is the part that gives me the most discomfort because it's the area where I think people can have the most tendency to get themselves in trouble, and that's part of the exceptions. I would like to be able to take this part of the video, forget everything, and assume there's no exception, because if you did that, you're guaranteed to be safe. Assume there's no exceptions. But we're going to talk about some exceptions just so I've done my job. First one is the big exception, and that is the state legislature. And at this point, you've got to be scratching your heads. What are we talking about? Well, the biggest legislative body in the state had a wherewithal to apply this law to all who want, but exempt themselves. They are not covered. So two or more legislators can get together and they can talk about bills and legislation and all kinds of member things, including football and baseball. But they can talk about what they're doing and the business that comes before them, and it's not a violation. And frankly, I believe this is because I don't think they could comply. But having said that, that has no impact on you. Here's something else that doesn't impact you. One of the things that I should have said right at the get-go is that people are under a big misconception about the fact that, oh, I'm a volunteer. Who's going to prosecute me? I'm volunteering my time. I'm doing my public service. And that makes a difference. But legally speaking, the fact that you don't get a dime makes no difference. The law applies to you just the same. So whether you are Mother Mary and Sisters of the Poor, or whether you are Bob Big Shot on council, doesn't matter. The law applies to you just the same. Here's something else we need to know. Common sense, even common courtesy, doesn't matter. In this situation, what may make perfect sense to you to do as another human being, if it violates the tenets of the statute, you still get prosecuted. Let me give you an example, again, from the School of Hard Knocks. In one of my cities, there was a financial advisory board, fiscal advisory board. They discussed complicated issues. Sometimes discussions get heated, and so it happened. Then on this one occasion, one particular board member got pretty hot with another, said some things that he later, upon full reflection, felt bad about. I was out there, but I found out about the fact because I was copied on email from that individual to the other individual, which was issuing a pause. Ms. Manners would apply at this point. But the reality of the situation is the Sunshine Law doesn't care about matters. The Sunshine Law cares about communication and the communication of the apology through the email. Also discuss the reasons why that particular member got so exercised and why they got so upset and why that position was what it was. And it engendered a response. And that means we had communication. We had outside of these meetings. We had events. And therefore, we had a violation. That's a problem. So, with all due respect to Ms. Manners, they don't matter here. If you got to make your apologies, you got to make them in a public setting, in a public meeting, or else let it go. So heed me on these things. The biggest misconstrued exception is what's called the social events exception. And this is one in which a lot of people take solace. Ah, I found it. This is the one that makes sense. This is the one that says, I can go to a party, I can go to dinner, I can have breakfast, I can do social things, and see some of these people that are on my board of commission, and it's okay. And that's true. It's right in the law. Except here's the problem. The essence of Sunshine Law violations is not the where. It's the what of disgust. What are you talking about? So even if you're at the debutante dance with your daughter, and you happen to talk to another dad whose daughter was also there, and you start talking about city or agency business, you have a violation. And it's not location that's going to save you. It's what you're talking about that's going to save you. And that's why this is the one that I said, please erase one particular exception from your memory banks today. That will be the one. Because that's where people get in trouble. Remember that. It's not a harbor. It's not a safe harbor because you're at a party or a dinner or a breakfast. If you're talking city business with another member of your board of commission, you have potential violations on your hands. Position papers are another exception. And this is an area that gets a fair amount of play in some of the cities that I represent. Specifically, we have to deal with a lot of complicated issues. When we're talking about growth management, when we're talking about alcohol ordinances, or how to regulate a bed and breakfast, or you name it. The issue can get very complicated, and oftentimes they require more time than typically we allow for public meetings. So you might have one or more eager beaver members on the body who want to go out and do some independent research. And this is a good thing. They then want to put together position papers. They want to stake out a position and say, this is how they believe and this is how they feel on a certain issue, and here's why. And they want to provide that to everybody else to read in advance so they can be educated and be ready to go when the meeting comes up. That is also specifically permitted. But again, the essence of Sunshine Law is communication about these matters. If those position papers engender a response back from someone who may disagree on that same board or commission, you have the potential for a Sunshine Law violation. So, what do I need to tell you about this beyond those things? Well, first, just from a social dynamic that I've observed, one of the things you should recognize is if you're one of those folks who has a desire to put out a position paper to the other members of your board or commission on some issue, recognize that in doing so, you potentially effectively tie the hands of other board members who may disagree with you from doing the same thing so that they are not engaged in some sort of violation. While that is going to keep you from having a legal violation, it may create some tensions in the dynamics between when you're on council or on your commission or board and having these meetings. And they might tell you that they appreciate it. So I warn you that. Secondarily, though, if the issue is important enough for you to put out a position paper, make sure of these things. Make sure it's distributed by staff, not you, to your fellow members, and make sure that you say very clearly and right on line, please do not respond to this position paper except in a publicly noticed meeting. If you do those things, you should be able to avoid problems with position papers. I will move into cautions now. Here's, I have a lot of those. And this one is called Where in the World's Carmen Sandiego? You're all familiar with that issue, that game, Where in the World's Carmen Sandiego, when you get geographic clues and someone tries to find where the person is. And I use that as an example to highlight that no matter where in the world you may be, if you happen to be with another member of your same board or commission, and you're talking about the business of your agency, you have a violation on your hands. It does not matter that you're outside the state, be it in Washington or somewhere else. If you're talking about the business that comes before you, you are in violation. And worse, if you come back and it's found out, that can be seen as evidence of the most severe violation, an intentional violation, the kind that gets you a prosecution for second-degree misdemeanor with a potential six-month sentence. The theory being, you left to avoid being detected, and you've now been detected. So bear in mind that whether you're in Washington, D.C., where often people go with some of their fellow members to do lobbying for Congress, or Tallahassee for the same purpose, wherever you are, the law, as long as you're on that board commission, still applies to you. And don't ever forget, prosecutions for those things are particularly painful. Now, I want to move into a brief discussion of public records issues and how they affect you in your service as a board commission. They're a different chapter than the Sunshine Law, but because of the nature of the meetings, there are parts of it that I want to express to you that are important in doing your service. I have observed many times members of my boards or commissions passing notes. More recently, the phenomenon of texting has invaded some of my bodies. They have their cell phones, their iPhones, and notes are going back and forth, and I know this. And it concerns me, and therefore I want to share it with you. Here's my point. If you are providing a note to anybody else on that body, you should follow the rule your teacher always taught you. Don't write a note that you wouldn't want to have read in front of the other members of your class. Because if someone finds out or sees this happen and requests a copy of this public record, that's exactly what's going to happen. Let me again give you an example that's close to me. Several years ago, one of the cities I represented had a very controversial development that was in front of them. And it had led to a vote on a particular portion that was Now, you might wonder at this point, how would he even know if a person was going to vote with him if he had already gone into the Sunshine Law? But that's beyond the scope of this video. What is important for this video is that when he comes back into the meeting and the meeting is not underway, he's still so angry, he goes ahead and writes out on a piece of paper the word Judas. And he underlines it, and then he slides it over to his fellow councilman to let him know on certain terms, he's tricked. But the meeting was there, he saw it, he requested it, and it made front page news the next day. So, no passing, not a good idea unless you want to see it in print. Probably not something that was legally problematic, but was it embarrassing? I would venture to say that the person who wrote that wishes he had it. So keep that in mind and take those words to caution. Another part of the public records law you should know is about dealing with emails. And a member of the public body, you may, in fact, probably will get emails from other citizens, lobbyists, who knows? But you'll get them. And if they deal with the business that come before you, they're also public records. Hopefully, your agencies have a repository, a city clerk or a clerk or somebody that you can go to and give the information, the emails that you send and receive, so that they're in a centralized place for record-keeping purposes. But if that's not the case, or if you have emails that you get and receive that aren't sent to others, but that do deal with the agency's business, you must save those. You cannot delete them. And upon request, you must be able to provide them. Because, after those records, you are the custodian, and you are bound by the law to make sure that you keep them so that they can be produced upon request. This is very important. Another kind of record that I need to be aware of is receiving unsolicited emails from other members of your board. You might, by attending this presentation today and watching this video, think, oh, why would that happen? Anybody who's seen this will know about it. Well, yeah, but that doesn't mean they listen. And frequently they don't listen. And frequently you will get unsolicited emails from members of your same board or commission. Having said that, what do you do? Well, here's what you first of all want to do. Don't hit the delete button. Because you don't want to engage in a public records violation while you're trying to avoid what you think is a Sunshine violation by another board member communicating with you. Simply don't delete, but don't respond. Don't reply, avoid the temptation, and bring it up at a public meeting if you must, but do not reply and don't delete. That's important. In Sunshine Law, content is key. Content is key. It's what you're talking about that makes the violation. Not where, not when, not anything other than what you're talking about and who you're talking about it with. Remember these things, and you should be able to avoid the problems that confront anyone, any public official who's ever been charged with a violation of Sunshine Law. In closing, you may be wondering, geez, is he ever going to finish this thing? Well, I'm there now. And if I scared you at first, I'm sorry, but I will. Because that's my intention. If you go away with enough healthy fear and respect for this law, chances are you have a better opportunity to avoid violating it. The system can't work without good people who volunteer themselves for public service. But the public expects you to know and understand not only your job, but the laws that apply to your job. And they will hold you to it, no matter whether you're paid or a volunteer. When it comes to public service, it's your job to stay legally informed.
Okay. Does anybody have any questions right off the bat? I have some notes that I want to touch on, but I want to answer your questions if you have any.
Board members have any questions?
Okay.
I actually have one. Maybe I should know this, but I don't. Do you happen to know what the retention schedule is for the town as far as how long they have to keep records?
I don't know. That's something that I can find out really easily, and I can shoot you an email. But as far as, like, how long back they keep their records...
Starting over.
Typically it's about 5 years, but it really depends on the nature of the items.
Yeah, it could be different for different items. Like building permits, it's going to be different than, you know, request to the clerk or something like that.
Yeah, the only reason I'm asking is that that's not something I don't ever recall seeing, and it might be good to have, just so that for myself personally, I would know how long we're talking. I mean, it's been my understanding that different municipalities, different forms of government have different retention schedules as far as length of things, but I don't know how that works in Florida, and I don't know how it works in Ponceland. So if you can get an answer to me, I appreciate it.
Yeah, I can get an answer, and I can send it to the board. On that note, for when Cliff was talking about emails going out, one note that I wanted to bring up is I caution the use of a reply all, particularly when, say, an agenda is sent out to everybody, and there may be a question of who knows that they will be able to be in attendance or won't be able to make it into attendance, and then it's just habit to click reply all. That can be construed as a violation because whether or not there's going to be a quorum is a relevant matter to the board, because if something's coming before the board, there could be some sort of strategic maneuvering in order to defer or something like that. It can just be, it goes back to that perception. So we encourage everybody to never use a reply all. If you want to send out something, a question to our office, for example, and you want everybody to be made aware of it without encouraging inner discussions, you can always blind copy and say, you know, we blind copied everybody, just so now I'm asking this question to the attorney's office, or we'll respond and say, we're responding to your individual question, but we are blind copying everybody, just so that you know what may come up at the next meeting, and you can have some foresight into what our office is saying or something like that. So that's just kind of a little tip that we add in there to just don't use the reply all. We've gotten in trouble with that a couple of times. As they said in the video, and as I'm sure you are aware, you can speak to board members that are on a different board, like the city or the town council or some other, the historic and preservation board or something like that. But it is really important that you cannot speak, or the mayor, you can't speak to any of those people on behalf of your board. So that's come up a few times as far as, you know, sending you to be the representative. That would violate Sunshine Law, even though it seems like it would not technically. Sending someone on your behalf who is not on any sort of a board, a staff member, to go speak on behalf of the board, that's a violation as well. So individual capacity only. I want to reiterate that these sunshine and public records violations are prosecuted every year, multiple, so it's not like something that does not come up. What you do professionally does not matter. What you, who you know, does not matter. If it's reported and investigated and there's merit, it will be prosecuted in all likelihood. So, and as they mentioned, you know, being in the headlines and a four-month investigation for the perception of a violation is brutal. So we just do everything we can to avoid it. My rule of thumb, personally, I'm sure everybody in here is in a very healthy relationship, but I just always say, pretend like your other board members are either some sort of enemy or an ex or something like that, and the public is your partner. And so if your partner would say, why are you talking to your ex? And it would make them really jealous. That's what it's going to look like. So don't speak to your exes just one-on-one because it looks bad and you don't want to get in trouble with your partner. So does anybody have any questions moving?
Any board members have any questions? I have one question that's, sure. I think, more for Debbie or Darren. Do you know offhand how many public records requests Ponce Inlet got last year?
Not offhand. I'm the records manager, so I take care of all the destruction. Most of the public records come in through the police department or building department. They handle most of those requests. The clerk's office is very, very few. The majority of them, again, come through the police department, and they get quite a lot. I don't know the exact number, but I'll be glad to find out and
give you a number. I don't think that's necessary. I was just curious. It just wouldn't, I mean, if you set aside the police department and code enforcement, I wouldn't offhand think a little town like this would get, you know, wheelbarrows full of public records requests, but I was just curious. Any board members have any other questions? If not, thank you very much. And we'll move on. Item number 9, public participation. I will open this up to the public. And seeing no members of the public here, I will close that and move on to number 10, board discussion. And I will open it up to the board for discussion on topics. Does any board member have anything else? I'm seeing nothing. And so I will entertain a motion for adjournment. And the motion and a second.
I move that we adjourn as of 2:53 p.m.
Second. We have a motion and a second. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. We are adjourned.